Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you. My guest this week is Stephen Rogelberg. Stephen is the Chancellor's Professor and Professor of Management at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, and the author of the book, The Surprising Science of Meetings, How You Can Lead Your Team to Peak Performance. He's been researching the topic of meetings for the last 20 years, and due to pent-up interest in the topic, along with a variety of ways in which he believes they can be improved, he wrote a book. In this interview, Stephen exposes the main reasons why meetings are inefficient and shares his tips on how organizations can improve them. He points out that there are roughly 55 million meetings per day, and most of them are ineffective or at least suboptimal. He notes that part of the reason is that only 20% of leaders ever receive any training on how to run a meeting, and the training they do receive is not meaningful. Moreover, organizations have no type of accountability on how their meetings are going, and no one in the organization is owning those meetings. To improve them, Stephen suggests that organizations consider shortening the meeting times, structuring meeting agendas around questions to be answered, banning the mute button for remote meetings, and limiting attendance at meetings to those who must be there. We also discuss the importance of being intentional in meetings, how Stephen got the inspiration to write a book on meetings in the first place, how a positive mindset from the leader is the best predictor of the mood of the entire team, and a variety of other topics. Stephen Rogelberg, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you today.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. And so, Stephen, you were the Chancellor's Professor and Professor of Management at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. You're also the author of a book out this year called The Surprising Science of Meetings, How You Can Lead Your Team to Peak Performance. And I thought we'd begin our conversation, Stephen, with why you elected to focus your attention on meetings. And in fact, I'm also curious, did you come up with the idea to write the book while multitasking in a meeting?
It was multitasking in lots and lots of meetings. I'm an organizational psychologist by training, and as an organizational psychologist, I'm really drawn to studying, doing research, and trying to address the vexing problems that occur in organizations, especially the vexing problems that are really frustrating people. And is there any better topic than meetings? So for the last 20 years, I've been doing research on this topic. And I was doing this research, I was doing a variety of corporate speaking events, and it just hit me that there was definitely this pent-up interest in the topic and interest in looking at ways that evidence can solve it. And then I said, hey, I'm going to try to do this book. And it was a blast to do, and it's been crazy to see the reaction to it.
Yeah, that's excellent. You include in the book a lot of really interesting data as to why we all ought to be concerned with this. You talk about the fact that there are 55 million meetings per day, and the vast majority of them are not necessarily achieving the intended objectives. And there's real gold in there if you can improve things. I wonder if you could begin a bit with some of that data.
Sure. So our research with organizations generally suggests that around 50% of meeting time, not 50% of meetings, but 50% of meeting time is well spent and engaging, where folks feel like that it's a good use of their time. But that also means that 50% of the time, that's not the case. So that's not a very positive ratio. When you think about the tremendous investment that organizations are making in meetings, as you said, 55 million a day, to only have a 50% return is somewhat concerning.
Moreover, you cite the fact that as you poll people coming out of meetings, there tends to be a single individual in meetings who thinks that they were a success, and those were the organizers of the meeting. And the majority of people are actually quite frustrated with meetings.
Yes, that's exactly right. This is an incredible blind spot for organizations. You can't imagine a single line item costing this much that receives almost no attention, right? We have folks spending upwards of half their time in meetings. This is a tremendous amount of personnel costs. But again, there's like no attention. There's this blind spot. So meeting leaders think they're better at it than they really are. That's a blind spot. But organizations are just accepting bad meetings as a way of life. But it doesn't have to be that way. There is a really robust meeting science that can provide guidance.
That's excellent. Before we get to the science and some of your recommendations that you highlight in your book, The Surprising Science of Meetings, I wonder if you could get a little bit further into the diagnosis of the issues. What is it that we're doing wrong? I mean, as you note, we're all in meetings. Many of us spend the majority of our days in meetings. And the extent to which we all believe that they are not as effective as possible, you know, what have been some of the reasons for that and the impediments for their improvement?
Sure. So at an organizational level, it's really sobering to know that only around 20% of leaders ever receive any training on how to run a meeting. Now, again, that's crazy. Talk about blind spots, right? With this much time being spent and only 20% of leaders receiving training. And then typically the training that is received is not meaningful. A lot of the training that exists out there tends to be, hey, do this tactic and meetings will get better. And that's just not true. So for example, we could say, you know, your meetings, you know, have an agenda, and having an agenda will make you a good meeting leader. But the data don't support that. Having an agenda in of itself actually does nothing to promote the quality of a meeting. And I'm sure we'll talk more later about agendas, but it's more complicated than just throwing a tactic at it. So A, people aren't getting training. B, the training they're getting is typically very superficial. C, organizations aren't doing any kind of accountability or assessment of how their meetings are going. So if you look at an organizational survey on meetings, there's no content, or an organizational survey on employee attitudes, there's no content around meetings. So there's no feedback and accountability for folks to learn and develop along these lines. And then finally, I would say no one in an organization is owning meetings, right? There's no chief meeting officer. There's no one saying, hey, we need to do this better as an organization, and here's some mechanisms for doing it, and here's how we're going to make sure that, you know, we keep people accountable. So those are kind of four forces kind of in the organizational system that are working against, you know, meetings kind of getting the attention they need to get better. And then obviously there's a million reasons why a meeting itself derails.
Right. And you have a diagnosis and even a solution for each of the areas that you've just described. I think one of the things I wanted to mention first off, as you talk about the improvement of meetings, is thinking about the timing of those. You make the point in the book, Stephen, that, you know, people set an hour-long meeting and then magically the discussion goes for an hour, but without necessarily thinking about what was the appropriate time necessary for what we wish to accomplish.
Yeah, yes, exactly. You know, time is, there's so many points of intervention to make meetings better. And, you know, why I think my book has done well is it doesn't present a magic formula. Instead, it presents just a variety of things for meeting leaders to think about, a variety of tools and techniques to try. And when we think about the length of a meeting, this is a perfect candidate for improvement. So most meetings are scheduled for an hour. And we know that a meeting typically scheduled for an hour lasts an hour. And this is because of something called Parkinson's Law. And Parkinson's Law is work expands to whatever time is allotted to it. So we can use this to our advantage, right? We don't have to schedule a meeting for an hour. We don't have to just rely on the defaults in an Outlook calendar, right? We can schedule a meeting for 50 minutes or 35 minutes. And lo and behold, it will take that much time. In fact, we want to be purposeful. We want to say, okay, given the goal, these goals, how long should the meeting actually take, right? We want to drive that decision. And then once we kind of make that decision, let's dial it back a little bit. The psychological research suggests that when you add a little extra pressure to a group, they actually are more focused and they perform more optimally.
Interesting. That constraint becomes actually your friend for productivity and getting more out of the meeting itself.
Exactly.
Interesting. I would love to dive into some of the other tests, things that you would suggest leaders test as they look to improve their meetings. What else would you suggest?
Well, let's since I already broached some agenda stuff, You want to talk a little bit about agendas?
Let's do. I love your focus on agendas and the need to actually come up with the questions that you're looking to have answered in each. Could you dive into more detail there?
I'd be happy to. So kind of going back to this notion that agendas in and of themselves don't necessarily improve meetings. And when you step back and reflect, again, that's not a surprise. Most agendas or many agendas tend to be recycled meeting to meeting. And what's more important than just having an agenda is if it's relevant, right? Did you actually ask people for input, right? Meetings are shared experiences. You need to ask folks. And then even more importantly is how you facilitate that agenda, right? Did you truly create an environment where people could engage and participate and good conversation? So what are some ways of promoting this? And I want to share one innovation that you just alluded to. And so this is kind of an idea that kind of challenges how we construct agendas. So typically agendas are structured as a set of topics to be addressed. What I want to propose is that try creating your agenda as a set of questions to be answered. And by framing your agenda as a set of questions to be answered, it actually requires you to think at a much higher level, right? Why are we truly getting together? What are we actually trying to decide or do? So that process requires, you know, it helps you kind of really kind of figure out the meaning of the meeting. But furthermore, by defining your agenda as a set of questions to be answered, A, you know who to invite because they're relevant to the questions, you know, and B, you know when to end the meeting because the questions have been answered in a compelling way. And if you just can't think of any questions, that's your sign that you probably don't. Exactly. Exactly.
Very interesting. And you also talk about, as you alluded to a moment ago, that the size is something to consider as well. Perhaps there's a tendency to invite too many people or irrelevant people, as opposed to thinking about who are those folks that we need to resolve the questions that need to be answered.
Yeah, excellent. I mean, we know, again, from the research that as meeting size increases, so does dysfunction. It's tough to pull off a meeting, period. It's tough to pull off a large meeting, you know, for sure. So we have to be more active in the management of meeting size. And there are some really basic ways of doing it that aren't being done. I'm going to give you the most simple way. You know, when you're thinking about your agenda, it might be the case that the first couple agenda items are relevant for a larger group, but maybe the latter ones are really only relevant for a smaller number of people. If that's the case, then have a more porous meeting boundary, right? Cover those first two items with a larger group and then let the other people go. You don't need to hold them captive. So that's a simple way of kind of managing meeting size in relationship to what you're trying to achieve. But interestingly, when you're determining kind of meeting size, it can be a little bit more tricky than we give it credit for. You know, namely that when people aren't invited to a meeting, they get a little anxious, right? They're worried that maybe they're being marginalized. So we kind of have to recognize that psychological dynamic. So when we're planning a meeting, it's very easy for us to identify who truly has to be there. Those core people, that's easy for us. Where we get ourselves in trouble are those secondaries, right? Those secondary people who are the nice to have. So for those individuals, once we identify them, we don't want to require attendance. We want to make attendance optional, but we need to go the extra yard. We need to tell these individuals, hey, we're having a meeting covering X, Y, and Z. I don't think it's really necessary for you to be there. But if you have any input, please, you know, share it. I'm going to give you the meeting minutes when it's done so you know what we talked about. And if at any point in the future you want to attend an additional meeting with us, you're more than welcome. If you lay out those three conditions, people will opt out. They will be grateful that you're giving them the gift of time, which is something we are all longing for. So you can imagine if this type of discussion is occurring in teams and departments and divisions and enterprises, next thing you know, your meetings are being lean and people are getting more time to innovate, time to be creative, all kinds of great things can happen from it.
You also talk about the need to deflate negative energy in meetings, that there is a tendency at times for the negative opinions to outweigh the positive ones, or to take a meeting in the direction that is unintended. Can you talk a bit about some of the strategies there?
Sure. So our research finds that people often experience meetings similarly to how they experience interruptions. And that's basically negative, right? A meeting is taking you out of your workflow. It's taking you from what you were previously doing and asking you to do something else that you might not be wanting to do. And that kind of puts us in a bad mental state. And this negativity is not just unique to you. It's potentially unique to everyone in the meeting. And what we know is that when people are more negative mood states, they tend not to be as open-minded. They tend not to be as creative. So these are things that we typically want in a meeting. So the best meeting leaders help bridge the separation, help the person make the separation from what they were previously doing to what they're being asked to do now. And to do that, they really have to recognize that they are inherently a host. And that's what they are, right? They invited people to their meeting. So what does a host do? A host, when people come into the meeting, they express appreciation. They thank them for coming, right? They really recognize that people are giving them time. They're helping make introductions to other people. They're starting the meeting off, well. And this doesn't mean like sugarcoating difficult topics, but it's just being, you know, bringing more positive energy to it. And the best predictor of kind of the mood of a team is the mood of the leader. So they need to, you know, walk the walk.
Very interesting. One of the challenges of modern organizations, Stephen, is the percentage of people who are remote, working from home, working from locations where there are not offices in which to domicile, and just the fact that we often have meetings with people of multiple offices. What are some of the challenges and then some of the resolutions to those challenges when thinking about remote call-in meetings and workers who might be in a variety of locations?
Yeah, so remote meetings are particularly tricky. I spent quite a bit of time in the book kind of focusing on remote meetings because they are more difficult. I mean, basically all the types of problems we have in regular face-to-face meetings get amplified in remote meetings. I'll give you like a good example. If you ask people, what is the most dysfunctional meeting type? They will say a remote meeting. But if you ask people, what meeting type do you most prefer to attend? They're going to say the remote meeting. You want to take a guess why?
Because they can, quote unquote, multitask or check out those perhaps.
Exactly. That's right. So that just gives you a whole picture right there, right? So the challenges of these remote meetings is that people aren't present, right? They don't feel accountable. They kind of blend into the background. You know, they're doing other things. So they have to be handled differently. And these, you know, meeting leaders, the need for, you know, lean meetings and very compelling agendas, everything gets more amplified with this remote meeting. But at the same time, the leader needs to kind of do some additional behaviors. They have to really truly recognize their role as an air traffic controller. They need to be calling people out. Hey, Gordon, I haven't heard from you for a while. What do you think about what's going on here? They need to insist people attend the meeting via video. To try to, again, create that identifiability. You know, they could be using the chat box to give people the option to indicate that they want to talk. So this more very active kind of leadership of remote meetings is essential. And I even have something in the book that's proven to generate some controversy, which I think is really fun when you think about a meeting book creating controversy. But I have in my book this notion that, you know, I want meeting leaders to consider banning the mute button. And so while I don't mean, you know, literally every time, you know, no one should ever be on mute, but I like this idea that the mute button, that if people aren't allowed to be on mute, then they have to pick a location to have their meeting that's quiet. They can't be eating or walking their dog, right? They are committing to being fully present in a quiet space, which is basically what we ask everyone who's not remote to do. So it doesn't seem like an unrealistic expectation. So while I don't literally mean ban the mute button, because I certainly see the needs, I like the symbolism of it. I like everyone at least being thoughtful so that they actually are attending the meeting such that they don't necessarily need the mute button.
Your book includes the last 15 or 16 pages of a variety of tools for leaders to use in order to improve the quality of meetings. You've alluded a couple places and wanted to dive a little bit further into measuring the effectiveness of meetings. You mentioned that that's so rarely done. And as a result of that, it's difficult to diagnose what's going well or what needs to improve. Can you talk a bit about some of the ways in which you recommend leaders do that?
Sure. So I remember this book has been, it's been going viral, and I've been able to do a whole bunch of media events, and the TV ones are always the hardest because basically they're trying to condense everything into a soundbite. And so I was doing this interview for BBC World, and they basically said, okay, tell us the one thing that every meeting leader should be doing. And that just stumped me, right? Because my initial response is, well, every meeting leader should just be buying the book. But I can't really give that as the answer. So I didn't really answer the question well, but when the interview was done, I stopped for a moment and said, okay, what really would be the one thing that I want everyone to do? And that one thing is to assess your meetings personally, right? So if you have folks that you regularly meet with and you're the meeting leader, well, check in with them, right? Do a quick survey. What's going well? What's going not so well? And what can we do differently? Right? This is such a basic thing to do, but meetings are shared experiences, right? Everyone is investing in it. So think about what that communicates to others when you're willing to take a look at making these meetings better. Right? It's the ultimate example of you being a type of a leader that's truly a steward. And those are the most effective leaders, these leaders who recognize that they are stewards. And so I want meeting leaders to kind of look at their meetings with that basic kind of diagnostic approach. And then there's obviously other tools that can be used to look at, you know, meetings from kind of more holistically. So I've been working with organizations to create some dashboards of how meetings are working for them. And the really exciting thing is that meetings are one of those things that you could actually cost out, right? We know the cost of almost every single meeting that people attend. Like, we can determine it based on time and salaries. And then using some of these measures, we can calculate a return on that cost. So from this, you can start creating this dashboard for departments, for teams, for enterprises, and then that creates focus. And then people are able to start making changes, because it's very hard to make changes when you have no metric to go by.
Yeah, very interesting. I mentioned at the outset, Stephen, that you're the Chancellor's Professor and Professor of Management at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. I can only imagine that in your department and perhaps beyond it, you're in a great number of meetings yourself. And do you find, since the book came out, that people are a little bit nervous when you step into a meeting because of your ability to sort of diagnose its effectiveness in a different way from others?
Yes. Yes, it's definitely. Yes, I get that statement all the time about feeling the pressure when I'm there. But I have to admit, one of the really added little benefits of writing a book about meetings is I find all the meetings I'm in have gotten better. People are actually, they're thinking more about the meeting. They want to make sure that they plan more properly. And what's so fascinating to me is that they're actually acting on the very principles of the book. So if I had to boil the book down into, some themes, the book basically says, we want people to be intentional, right? Stop just dialing it in when it comes to meetings, but start making choices. Be intentional and thoughtful about kind of the experience you're creating. Interestingly, every time we meet with a customer, every time we meet with our boss's boss, right, we are incredibly intentional. We don't want any of those people to leave our meetings saying, gosh, that was a waste of time, right? That would be devastating to us. And that intentionality doesn't take much time. It could be 30 seconds to 2 minutes, but we actually are just more intentional. But when it comes to meeting with our peers or our team, we just put those intentionality skills all away. So I do find that since I've written this book, when people meet with me, they just tend to be more intentional, and I'm really grateful for it.
That's great. Well, Stephen, as this meeting draws to a close, how was it? How'd we do?
Oh, I liked it. I liked it, but we're not the best sources of information, right? Your listeners will tell us if we did a good job.
Indeed they will. Indeed they will. Well, I must say, Stephen, I for one, enjoyed this meeting. I appreciate you taking time with me on Technovation today, sharing your insights from your book, as we've mentioned, The Surprising Science of Meetings. Thank you so much for a great conversation.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate being here.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week when my guest will be Chris Drumgoole, the Chief Information Officer of General Electric.